let's get rolling again. First of all, let me give you some follow-up on Kathy. I said earlier this was about her third session. She was seen for a total of 16 sessions. She went off the Part A fairly early in treatment with her psychiatrist's approval. Her depression improved steadily through treatment until she was completely within the normal range for the last several sessions. Not only was she no longer depressed, but her confidence increased to the point that she was able to get a new and better job. She ended up, A, saying no to Rick turned out to be a wonderful idea. B, she ended up deciding that she wanted to date other guys in addition to Rick, and he didn't like the idea, and she said, and followed through on it, and he put up with it. Barb got a follow-up Christmas card from her a year after she terminated treatment, where she wrote that she was doing well, her life loved her new job, it was working out well, obviously, we choose the case examples that get good results. we're not stupid. But actually, Kathy is a real good example of how this is supposed to work. And one thing to notice is that we're not talking about dealing with negative thinking by going to positive thinking. We're really talking about realistic thinking. When people are depressed, looking at things realistically turns out to be more positive than the way things look when they're depressed. But Kathy's relationship with Rick was not perfect. We're not trying to convince her it's perfect. We're trying to help her make a good choice about how she wants to deal with that relationship. The job she had at that point was not perfect. Well, actually, time after next, we'll see a video in which she's reacting to the job she had at this point. Shifting to a better job was a good idea. And so it's not just coming up with responses to negative thoughts. It's a much more comprehensive approach than that. One thing that's real important to keep in mind, particularly for those with traditional backgrounds, the idea of a schema or a core belief that's behind the person's problems is really seductive. And one thing people tend to slip into is to thinking, aha, we'll just go after the core belief and change it, and poof, the person's problems will go away. Which is sort of the traditional psychodynamic view of things. There are a couple different problems with that approach. First of all, what are Kathy's core beliefs? Beats me. That's all Barb can do at this point to figure out what thoughts are going through her head in the moment. It doesn't work to start off working on core beliefs because the client can't just sit down and tell you what their core beliefs are. Figuring out what the core beliefs are takes time. And if our game plan is, we'll work on the core beliefs and then the person will feel better, we're talking about weeks and months until the client feels better. This has drawbacks for the client. Also, how do we get the information we need to figure out what the core beliefs are? Working on Kathy's thoughts and behaviors in the here and now, A, helps her life improve in the here and now. B, gives us the information we need to figure out what the core beliefs are. And so by starting off working on specific problems one at a time in the here and now, gives us the information we need to address the core beliefs later on in therapy, presuming that they need to be addressed later on in therapy. Another important point, which we'll come back to at several other points in the course, one problem with the idea that we go to the roots of the problem and resolve it and then the problem goes away presumes that if we resolve the roots, the problem's going to go away. And one important concept that Gordon Allport came up with back in the 1940s, we're not talking about a new development, we're talking about 40s, which should have been covered in grad school and probably wasn't, is the concept of functional autonomy. There are a lot of problems that once they develop, they become self-perpetuating. And you can deal with the root causes all you want, and the problem cranks along under its own momentum. If I have a traumatic experience as a little kid and never learn how to ride the bicycle, we can process my traumatic experience all we want. I still don't know how to ride a bicycle. And if I want to be able to ride a bicycle, I'm going to need to learn how to ride a bicycle in the here and now. Now, it may be important to resolve the traumatic experience so that I'm willing to go forth and learn how to ride a bicycle. Or it may turn out that my traumatic experience is history and I can just go ahead and learn to ride the bicycle now without having to resolve it. And our vote is in favor of dealing with traumatic experiences if they need to be dealt with and not spending time on them if they don't need to be dealt with. How's all that sound? Now, hopefully this sounds good and makes sense. How do we get to the point where we can actually do it and have it work as well as it does when Barb does it? Well, you know, any new skill takes practice. And one of the things we try to do is break things down into manageable chunks because it's a whole lot easier to master things that way. And I'm going to zip through a couple different points and then we'll get to actually practicing some.
I have a question before you get to it. So how do you address the criticism that CBT is a short term? It doesn't, I mean, the goal with cognitive behavior therapy is some criticism, like I go to a monthly psychoanalytic seminar. So how do you address that?
Well, A, if it's short term, in what way is that a bad thing? Mm-hmm. You know, if Kathy wants to not be depressed anymore, and we see her for 16 sessions, and she's not depressed anymore, how is that a criticism?
Well, I mean, what I heard is that they say because you didn't get to kind of root to it, you kind of solved that immediate problem, but it's going to come back again. So they
if it came back again, then that would demonstrate that we hadn't accomplished what we needed to accomplish. But with Kathy, we've got a year follow-up. It didn't come back in that year. Now, we don't. Maybe it came back in 10 years or 20 years. We don't know. But what we know from the research is that, you know, CBT for depression has a, you know, lower relapse rate than meds does. I don't, off the top of my head, remember side-by-side comparisons with psychodynamic therapy. I'd have to look into that. If we take people who respond well to meds and add 10 sessions of CBT, it cuts the relapse rate in half. And, you know, if there was evidence that psychodynamic therapy produced better long-term results, that would be an important criticism. As far as I know, there's no evidence of that. There's the assumption that you're going to get symptom substitution. But actually, what the research shows is if you do CBT for a specific focus problem, the study that comes to mind is undergrads with a snake phobia. You know, if we do standard CBT for snake phobia with undergrads for snake phobia, and then follow up and see how they do in general, the symptom substitution idea says, oh, then we should have new problems popping up in other areas of the undergrads' lives. What the data shows is actually their life, their functioning improves across the board in areas that are not obviously related to the snake phobia, rather than problems popping up in other areas. And you can actually understand it in psychodynamic terms. You know, what is ego strength? Ego strength is the effectiveness of the person's dealing with the demands of reality. If we treat somebody for a snake phobia and they are now doing better, they can handle snakes rather than running away screaming, what's happened to their ego strength? Their ego strength is now higher than it used to be, by definition. If somebody's ego strength goes up, what should happen? Their symptomatology should improve across the board. That even if you're wholeheartedly psychodynamic, you know, we wouldn't necessarily predict symptom substitution. But also the research shows that symptom substitution isn't the problem in CBT. Sometimes you get things that look like symptom substitution, because we haven't understood what the problem is and what needs to be done with it. I'll probably touch on this again when we get to anxiety disorders, because I'll forget I've already said this. But there was a guy with a phobia of crossing the Golden Gate Bridge. This was a problem for him because he lived in Marin County and worked in San Francisco. And so his behaviorist desensitized him to the Golden Gate Bridge. He drives across the Golden Gate Bridge and has a panic attack in the parking lot at work. Gee, that sounds like symptom substitution. It turned out that what was going on was an inadequate assessment. He wasn't afraid of the Golden Gate Bridge. He just got promoted at work. He was afraid that he couldn't handle his new responsibilities. As he drove to work, he got more and more anxious. Coincidentally, his anxiety peaked when he got to the bridge. When we desensitize him to the bridge, we're missing the point. It's not the bridge he's afraid of. Then he freaks out in the parking lot. It's not the parking lot he's afraid of. We need to treat his fear of his new responsibilities at work. You know, so sometimes you get things that look like symptom substitution, and it's because, oops, we screwed up this time. We didn't understand what the heck we were doing. Which is a great transition to my next point, which is, you know, on paper, we've got this, you know, theoretical understanding of what's going on in depression. And this gives us an idea of what things are important to get to, and we get these ideas as how to go about it. In order to do this effectively, we need to understand the individual who's sitting in front of us. When I got my original therapy training, what you did was in session one, you went in and you were therapeutic, and in session two, you went in and you were therapeutic. And after a few months of doing that, you knew all sorts of things about the client's life and their history and so on. But it takes a long time to understand the person if you're getting it in bits and pieces sprinkled over time. If we want to start off, you know, focusing on the important stuff, then we need to figure out what's important. And the best way we can come up with to do that is to start therapy off by doing an initial evaluation. We get a quick snapshot of what problems the person's having currently. And we get a snapshot of what their life is like currently. And we get a snapshot of what their childhood was like and what their relationship history was like and so on. And then I've got a Cliff Notes version that gives me enough to start with, and I'll obviously learn a lot more as we go. And if you turn to page 11 in the handouts, you've got what we typically cover in an initial evaluation, which is not radically different from anybody else's initial evaluation. Typically, I start off by finding out, you know, about the presenting problems. You know, I start off by saying, probably makes sense to start off with you filling me in a bit more on what brings you in here today. Nice open-ended question. And I want to find out what problems they're having, when they started up, how they got to this point, what they've already tried, etc. And I'm going to follow it. Okay, that gives me a good snapshot there. Are there other problems as well? Sometimes people mention one problem, and if you don't ask, they don't mention, oh, and by the way, I'm drinking too much, and oh, by the way, I think I'm gay. Okay, and those are useful things to know about. We may have more than one issue to work on here. And once I've got, and, you know, I'm trying to do this efficiently, so I'm going to, we're just getting the Cliff Notes version. I'm not going into all the details at this point. Once I've got an understanding of their current problems that bring them in for therapy, I want to find out what's their life like currently. Are they married or single? Do they have kids? What kind of work do they do? How's work going for them? You know, how's, you know, their marriage going? You know, what are their interests and activities? How do they get along with people in general? And then I'm going to find out, you know, could they give me a thumbnail sketch of what growing up was like for them? Nice open-ended prompt. And I want to find out just the very basics of their childhood, what their dad was like, what their mom was like, how their parents seemed to get along with each other, any major childhood events that had a lasting impact on them, how school go for them, how dating go for them. You know, if they're in a relationship, you know, how they meet this person, what's this person like, how are things going? You know, do they have any concerns about relationships? Do they have any concerns about their sexual relationship? I'm going to want to pay attention to relevant cultural factors. If somebody happens to have a background very much like my own, then I probably understand their culture reasonably well. On the other hand, what portion of my caseload are people who grew up in the Deep South with parents from the North who then moved back to the North, that even though I'm a middle-class white guy, this does not mean I've got the same cultural background as every other middle-class white guy. You know, it's real handy to notice that culture is not nearly as monolithic as we presume. You know, if somebody is obviously ethnically different from me, then it's not rocket science to recognize there might be some cultural issues worth considering. But it's handy to keep your eyes open and realize that just because somebody looks and sounds like me does not necessarily mean we've got the same cultural background. I might want to check it out some. In terms of checking out cultural issues, one of the cool things in DSM-5 is they've got a cultural formulation interview, which on the times when there's enough of a cultural issue it makes sense to invest some time and energy in understanding it in detail, is a good format for doing that. And, you know, if the cultural issues are less extreme and I don't need to put that much time and energy into it, it still gives some ideas about how to ask effectively about parts of the cultural issues that are important. And so I'll refer you to that. If you've got DSM-5, it's there in the appendices. If it's not, the link to it is among the resources in the handout. I'm also going to want to find out about their employment history. You know, how did they get from college to where they are now? How's their job going for them? How do they feel about their work? And I'm going to want to find out how's their health? Any medical issues? Are there any meds they're taking? Any known allergies? And this is a nice segue into checking on substance use. You know, how much caffeine in a typical day, coffee, tea, soda, do they smoke? How much alcohol do they drink? Do they use any street drugs? And, you know, if there are warning signs, then I'll look into it in more detail. But at this point, I'm generally just getting a quick overview. You know, have they been in therapy before? If so, you know, with who, what for, how did it go? What are their observations about what was useful or not useful about it? And I generally finish up with, I've been asking all the questions so far, what questions do you have? You know, this is a lot that we're trying to cover. I'm pretty good at keeping people focused and concise while getting the information I need. And I can get through 75-80% of this in a single session and have a little bit left for the beginning of the next session. Barb keeps people a little less focused than I do and is more likely to take two sessions to get through this. And it also, some clients are more long-winded than others. You know, some clients are good at, you know, giving concise answers that tell me what I need to know. So it's going to vary from person to person how long this takes. But my goal is to quickly get a Cliff Notes version that gets me oriented, and then I'll flesh it out over the course of therapy. Yeah. And, you know, next we're probably going to want to talk over goals for therapy. What are we trying to accomplish? You know, I usually introduce that, you know, one of the things I like to do is think about, you know, what our priorities are, what we're trying to accomplish, so we get to the most important stuff first. You know, imagine we work together for a while and we're wonderfully successful. How would you like things to be different when we're done? And I want to focus on what we're trying to accomplish, not what problems the client has. That's not necessarily the same thing. Barb's going to be talking about that more this afternoon, so I'll let her do her work this afternoon. And, you know, with the video, just make sure I'm not missing anything. One of the things
So, to do the initial assessment, there are a number of questions you have to go through. But in terms of goals, you know, in the text that you recommended, one of the in terms of goals, it suggested that you kind of break it down. Mm-hmm. But to do the initial assessment, they will, if, for example, I mean, one client, what is your goal? Anxiety free, because they have anxiety, mm-hmm. That's their goal. You do know, of course, you need to break it down. So for that, I am thinking to break it down, it's going to take a while. Would you kind of, because there is insurance that you need to, for insurance purposes, you need to get it done for a session, kind of, would you do that, take a session, kind of break it down?
Barb's going to be talking about goals this afternoon, so rather than getting into it in depth now, Barb will be covering that this afternoon. But A, you know, the person's insurance coverage doesn't dictate what I do. I'm trying to do effective therapy. Hopefully the person's insurance company coverage will not interfere with doing effective therapy. But my ethical obligation is to do what's in the client's best interest, not to cater to the insurance company. Insurance companies that see it differently can have other people as providers. Thank you. And it's really easy to get into thinking, you know, the insurance company says X, so I have to do it. No, I might choose to go along with what the insurance company wants, particularly if it's to the client's advantage. But, the insurance companies like to try to dictate what we do, except they're not on the hook in terms of liability. You know, they're trying to save money rather than look at what's in the client's best interest. And it's actually really useful for clients if we're willing to be advocates for them in dealing with their insurance company rather than just rolling over and playing dead. But back at the ranch. One of the things I touched on earlier, and it's an important point, so I'm going to touch on it again, is we're trying to work with the person towards goals they value. That's interest easier once we've got the goals spelled out. But we're going to be talking about collaboration at a variety of different points over the year because it makes a big difference in how therapy goes. If I'm trying to impose my agenda on the client, they're real likely to resist that. They're likely to not follow through on doing what needs to be done. Therapy is going to be slower and less effective. If I can keep things structured that we're working together towards goals that are meaningful to them, therapy goes faster, people follow through better, I don't have to work nearly as hard. And it's very much worth investing a little bit of effort here and there. You know, good concrete example, imagine you go to your local appliance superstore to buy a microwave. Salesman comes up to you, finds out you want a microwave, and launches into selling you the microwave he wants you to buy. How do you find yourself reacting? Most people find themselves planting their feet and resisting, and you may well find yourself walking out without a microwave even though you walked in to buy a microwave. Imagine you walk into the same store and get a different salesman. He finds out you want to buy a microwave and then launches into finding out what you want in a microwave so that he can help you get the one that suits you. How do you react to that? Well, at first you plant your feet and resist because you don't know which salesman you've got. As soon as it dawns on you that this guy is trying to work with you to help you accomplish what you want, you know, are you just heating up leftovers or cooking three-course dinners? You know, is this for a big family or a small family? Do you want all the bells and whistles or do you want the basic economy model? You're going to find yourself working with him. You're going to find yourself volunteering information. You're more likely to walk out with a microwave under your arm. It's more likely to be one you're happy with. You know, collaboration is something that's really valuable. It makes our job much easier. We're going to try to use the time in the session efficiently, but we're also trying to collaborate with the person. So I'm not going to unilaterally declare this is what we're doing, because voila, we're back, going to be back in a power struggle because the person's going to feel like I'm being controlling. You know, and so we're going to start off the session by agreeing with the client on what we want to focus on today. And on paper, this is usually referred to as agenda setting. Does this mean I use the word agenda in talking to the client? It's real useful to talk to the clients in their own vocabulary. If I'm dealing with, a businessman who talks about agendas all the time, agenda is a fine word to use. You know, if I'm dealing with, you know, an inner city mom of three who's working on her GED, maybe she uses agenda on a regular basis, but she probably doesn't. You know, I'm going to want to use a vocabulary that speaks to her. Most of the time, I don't use the word agenda. I say, one of the things I like to do at the beginning each time is figure out what we want to be sure to get to so nothing important is left hanging. How does that sound to you? The client says, sounds good to me. The first time I'm introducing this, I then mention, well, I've got a few questions left over from last time, and I'm like, you know, I nominate some things I've got in mind, and then I ask them what they want to be sure we get to. Because if I just say, I'd like to figure out what we want to be sure to get to so nothing's left hanging, what do you want to get to? It feels like a pop quiz. They haven't thought about it. They weren't anticipating this. They feel put on the spot. That's not good. So the first time, I propose some agenda items, you know, and then ask them what they want to be sure we get to, because that's easier. That doesn't feel like a pop quiz. It gives them an image of what I'm asking about. After the first time, all subsequent times, you know, I start off by finding, check in and see how things are going and what do you want to be sure we get to today? Because if I keep presenting my agenda items first, a lot of clients will just say, sounds fine to me, Doc, and not even think about what they want to get to. So after the first time, I ask for their agenda items first, and this, they know this is coming. They're going to find that on their way to my office, they start thinking, hey, what do I want to get to today? And that right there helps us use the time more productively. They get comfortable with speaking up for what they want pretty early on in therapy. You know, and if they say, I don't know, beats me, I don't just charge past it. Let's stop and think about it. Our goals, well, we're planning on working on your depression, and we left off with wherever we left off. Does that suggest anything about what we might want to do today? You know, rather than if the person doesn't have anything in mind they want to get to, I don't ignore that. I help them think it through and figure out what they want to get out of today's session. Because I want them to be involved. I want them to have some ownership. You know, if they're a passive passenger as I paddle along, A, I'm going to have to paddle a lot harder. B, it's going to be a lot more work to get them to follow through on doing what needs to be done. And it's the stuff they do differently out in real life that makes a difference. Whether it's handling their relationships differently, thinking differently, getting their butt up off the couch and being more active. You know, so I need to structure therapy in such a way that people actually go forth and do things differently in real life. And so, on page 13 in the handouts, we've got what we're shooting for. I want to do this early in therapy because if I, you know, am halfway through the session and then, oh, what do we want to focus on today? We've already wasted half the session. You know, it makes sense to do this at the beginning. When you're new at this, there's a judgment call. Do I want to find out, hey, how have things been, and then set the agenda? Or do I want to set the agenda and then find out how things are going? It's more natural to, hey, how are things going? Okay, let's figure out what to focus on today. That's more natural, but when you're new at this, that's harder to do. Because if you say, oh, how have things been, and the client launches, oh, it's terrible, Doc, this happened, and then that happened, and then that happened, you know, by the time the dust settles, the session's over, and you never discussed an agenda. And maybe crisis intervention was what was important today, or maybe the client was upset and vented about what they were upset about, and we spent the whole session venting without accomplishing anything. If we take a couple minutes, so yes, I understand you're real upset. That sounds like we're going to need to spend some time on that. Is there anything else we should be sure to get to also? Then we are in a position to choose whether to spend the whole session on them being upset about what they're upset about, or spend part of the session on it, or set that aside and spend the session on something else. And we're going to make that decision collaboratively, jointly. It's not going to be me unilaterally deciding. I saw a hand. Yeah.
So if we are in a session and there was some goals we did not reach to that session, and there was an agreement between therapist and patient that, okay, we'll do it next time. But then the next session, when they come, they have something really new. They want to talk about it first. But how would you handle that?
I would handle it by saying, well, when we left off last session, we were planning on spending today on relaxation exercises. But it sounds like you're really upset about this fight you had with your mother. You know, do we want to change our plans and spend today on the fight with your mother? Do we want to go ahead with relaxation exercises anyway? Do we want to spend part of the session on the fight with your mother, part of the session on relaxation exercises? And I'll find out what their preferences are. And I'll also think, what makes sense to me? You know, are relaxation exercises so important that, you know, their fight with their mother needs to wait? Is their fight with their mother so important that relaxation exercises need to wait? Can we split the session and do some of each? And we'll make the decision jointly. You know, I'm not a short order cook. It's not just I find out what the client wants and I do it whether it makes sense or not. I'm also not the king of the world, and we do what I think makes sense whether or not the client wants to. And we're trying to work together towards goals they value. And if the client comes up with something that seems unrelated to their goals, you know, I might want to spend a little bit of the session saying, gee, you know, you wanted to work on your depression, but you keep coming back to your job dissatisfaction. Is that something we should add to our list of goals? People don't necessarily think of everything they want to accomplish, you know, the first time we discuss it. We may well revise and add to our list of goals as we go. So we want to, you know, agree on the agenda early on and be clear enough so that we can tell whether we're on topic or not. You know, sometimes, you know, clients come up with, you know, proposals that sound like a good idea, but are really, I want to work on my self-esteem. Sounds quite reasonable, perfectly legit thing to work on. Can I tell if we're on topic or not? Or is that so vague that it's going to be hard to tell whether we're on topic or not? You know, I might work on self, sounds like a great idea. Do you have an image of what you'd like to accomplish today in terms of self-esteem? And I'll think about what point are we at in therapy, you know? You know, do I already know what self-esteem problems they run into in what situations? In which case, we could probably start working on. Or do I not know that yet? And the first round is, the first thing we're going to need to do is I'm going to need to understand what problems you run into and what situations they come up in. How's that sound as a starting point? And that's specific enough so I probably can tell if we're on topic or not. You know, I don't want to sign on to goals that are unrealistic. You know, I want to, it needs to be something that's feasible to work on in the time. You know, I want to resolve all my childhood trauma. Great, we're not going to do that in a single session. We need to pick, you know, a chunk of that to work on today. And if I don't write down the agenda, halfway through the session, am I going to remember what else we were planning on getting to today? You probably know the answer to that one. I'm certainly not going to remember it, so I definitely need to write down the agenda so that 20 minutes into the session, I remember what the heck we're trying to accomplish today. And, you know, if we've agreed on an agenda and then something important pops up, do we just ignore it because it's not on the agenda? No, that would be stupid. We want our agenda to be flexible. But do we want to just blow off the agenda because something new comes up? That makes it look like the agenda is not important. What we want to do is say, gee, we've been working on your problems at work, but you just mentioned that you think you might be gay. That sounds important. You know, do we need to switch to that topic now? Or do you want to finish working on work and get to that next week? You know, if we explicitly revise the agenda when something new comes up, then we don't blow the credibility of the agenda. But we're not stuck being rigid when it's stupid. And if we want an agenda to be useful, we need to use it. We need to stay clear in our own head. What are we working on right now? If irrelevant stuff pops up, we steer the person back. Or we make a change in the agenda if there's a good reason to. If the person's going into tedious detail much more than we need, we try to get them to be more concise. If the person's not giving us enough information, we try to get them to expand, etc. But we, you know, for the agenda to be useful, we need to make use of it. Agenda setting is something that sounds simple and straightforward, but we know from experience, you know, it's not as easy as it sounds like. So what we're going to do now is break into three-person groups and practice agenda setting. In the handouts, on the bottom of page 13, you've got a script for agenda setting in a first session. And on the page of page 14, you've got a script for agenda setting in later sessions. You know, for those of you who are new to this, I would recommend the first time around have this in front of you and consider just reading it out loud or feel free to improvise based on that format. And what you with the role play instructions have come around. Hopefully, everybody's had a copy. This is a therapy session early in treatment. The initial evaluation has been done. Just imagine the initial evaluation has been done. But you and the client haven't discussed goals for therapy yet. So when you're in the therapist role, you want to explain agenda setting and propose to the client that you'd like to talk over goals for therapy and find out if there's anything they want to be shooting at. And once you've done that, you're done. We're just practicing setting the agenda. When you're in the client role, you're being a cooperative client. You're not trying to give the therapist a hard time. You know, the therapist says they want to talk over goals and priorities. You're probably going to say something along the lines of, oh, that sounds good to me. You know, and the therapist is going to ask you if there's anything you want to be sure to get to. Think of something you want to be sure to get to. Do you want to talk about the fight with your mother? Do you want to talk about sticking to your diet? Make something up. It need not be relevant to anything. For role plays, next time and in the future, we're going to ask you to choose a personal issue you want to work on that's superficial and appropriate for a role play in class. You know, if you have the misfortune to have a history of childhood sexual abuse, don't choose that. That's not appropriate for role plays in class. That's for your own therapy. Something like sticking to a diet, you know, procrastinating less, getting caught up on your paperwork, not crabbing at your kids. You know, then when your therapist is trying to pinpoint automatic thoughts, you don't have to make up automatic thoughts. You can identify real automatic thoughts. You know, this works better than trying to role play clients. We used to do it that way. And also, you may get caught up in your paperwork and stick to your diet better and so on. Any questions? Okay, we're now going to spontaneously break into three-person groups. I presume you guys can count to three. Three groups can go across the hall. Yeah. That's our actual offices are across the hall.
Sure.
We've got two therapy offices and a waiting room, all fair game. And at least one group will stay here. If we don't divide equally by three, do two-person groups. But no four-person groups, no one-person groups, either two or three. And I'll be circulating from group to group, listening, giving feedback, answering questions.
Going to go over the instructions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Again. Yep. Reading the instructions is a great idea.
So, brief the client, set the agenda. This is my role. Since this is the first actual therapy session, explain general process of setting a plan for each session. Your main agenda is begin setting goals for treatment. Ask the client what they want to be sure to discuss. Follow the sample agenda. Be sure to write down. Be sure to conclude the agenda before you actually proceed to discuss anything. Okay, so we're going to discuss ABC today. How's that sound? Okay. Once you've agreed on the agenda, summarize it and the role play. Do not actually begin to discuss. Then you, they, and the observer will discuss the interaction. Okay, so that's my role.
Once you've agreed on the agenda, summarized it and the role play. Do not begin. Okay. All right.
Yeah, you're just practicing the agenda setting. And you're not going on to actually work on stuff.
Interaction. That's what we're basically working on. Then.
Who's client? Who wants to be the client?
I can be client.
Okay. So, and then you're going to pick a real problem.
Right. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Do you want to read through that?
Yeah. Sure. Read through that part. So,
pick a problem. Any problem.
pick a real problem where you would like to make some changes and an event or two from the past week you'd like to discuss when the therapist asks you what you would like to focus on in today's session, tell them you want to talk about these topics. Pick ones that are trivial enough to use with people you don't know well. The therapist is going to try to reach an agreement with you regarding the agenda for today's session. Try to concisely speak about what you want to discuss. Once the agenda has been agreed upon, summarize the therapy. Okay.
Yeah, I'd recommend going ahead and trying it. There's no need to memorize the instructions. You're free to look at them. You know, I recommend, you know, referring to the script and the handouts, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. All right.
I think it was on page 14, maybe.
I didn't bring that with some of it.
All right.
Do you need something to write the agenda
I've
down?
I'll just write it down right here. So, hello, how are you today?
Good, thank you. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Since this is the first time you've been to therapy, I want to explain the process of setting goals. What we like to do is set goals each time. We'd like to set some goals, but at each session we'd like to talk about also what you're interested in discussing that may or may not be within the goals. So what would you like to focus on today?
Probably stress levels. I have trouble. My day begins with a horrible traffic jams, and I get all wound up, and by the time I get to work, I can't focus, and then I've got all these things to do, and I just feel horrible, and at the end of the day, I'm just wiped out. And then I have to go grocery shopping, and there's lines, and people pushing people, and it's just those kind of situations just, I start to get anxious just even going into a store at night.
Okay, so you'd like to focus on working on your stress levels.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay, so is there anything else that you'd like to discuss today?
Nothing else seems to be bothering me. I think that's where I just seem to have a trouble going from task to task to task, and I just everything seems built up. I can't think of anything else that's relevant.
So, all right. Okay. So, what would you like to start with today?
Probably just that, how to manage traffic in the morning. That would be a good place to start. How do I keep myself calm when everyone's cutting me off and zooming all around?
So today we're going to start, we're going to talk a little bit about how we're going to manage traffic today.
Well, ta-da! How does that seem to you guys as an agenda?
It's good to me.
Yeah.
Just agreed.
The therapist, the items the therapist wanted to get
yeah,
on the agenda.
No, that didn't get on the agenda.
Oh. Yeah, yeah. And so, if I've got things I want to include mm-hmm. in the session, mm-hmm. I need to remember to propose those
right,
too.
To speak up on that.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to, mm-hmm. as the therapist, we have to try and think of what was going on. Well, in this case, we have to create something that was going on in the
well,
past.
Well, actually, in this case, the instructions tell you you want to talk over goals and priorities for therapy.
Okay.
So, I appreciate, I understand what, or I hear what you'd like to discuss. What I'd like to discuss today is what our overall goals for therapy are going to be. How does that sound?
Sounds good.
And then, since we've got more than one thing on the agenda, the question is, which do we get to
uh-huh,
first?
Yes.
You know, and in general, I'll find out, does the client have a preference what to get to first? But sometimes one order makes more sense than the other. Mm-hmm. If we're going to talk about traffic and we're going to talk about goals and priorities, it probably makes sense to go talk over goals for therapy mm-hmm. first, because then when we talk about traffic, I'll know what our goals are. If we talk about traffic first and then talk about goals, you know, I may or may not be on target in talking about traffic.
So start with the goals.
Mm-hmm. And so switch roles, try it, you know, several times around. Yeah. We've got about 15 minutes left.
Yeah. We probably should get back to giving. I'll be the therapist now. Yeah. Good morning, Mel.
Melanie, how are you doing?
I'm doing good.
One thing I'd like to do at the beginning each time is to figure out what we want to be sure to get to so that we don't leave anything unimportant out of our time today. How does that sound to you?
It sounds good.
Okay. Today, well, I'd like to see if you had any questions left from the last time we met, and I think it'd be good for us to talk over the goals that we have set together, that we want to work on together. Can you tell me, are there any things that you want to be sure that we touch base on today, that we talk about today?
Today I wanted to make sure to be able to talk about my daughter and her, how college isn't working out for her, mm-hmm. and where we're going to go with that.
Okay. All right. Okay, that sounds like an important topic to talk about. Is there anything else that you'd like to make sure we have time for today to discuss?
I feel like that's the main thing this week that's causing a lot of stress and anxiety for me.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, Melanie, for sharing that, and we'll go ahead and start with that then today.
Ta-da. Any questions?
The first session, then, does the therapist also discuss some items they want to make sure to get to as well?
Mm-hmm. Which you did. Okay. You wanted to talk about goals.
And
the first session, we recommend the therapist propose their agenda items first.
Oh, yeah.
After the first session, I'm going to, what do you want to be sure to get to today? Okay. Once the client has had their say, I'll say, I'd also like to, whatever I've got in mind for today.
Okay. All right.
And each time, then we've got the question of what to get to first.
Okay.
And so, in general, I'll ask the client, do you have any preference, if we've got more than one item on the agenda, do you have any preference about which we get to first?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sometimes it makes a difference what order you do it in. And for this session, if we're talking about goals and priorities and talking about your daughter's, issues with college, it probably makes sense to talk over goals and priorities first, because then when we get to the other one, we know what the heck our goals are.
Yeah.
Okay. To the client, it probably makes sense to talk over goals and priorities first, so I know what we're trying to accomplish when we talk about.
Okay. Okay. Sure. Yep.
Great.
All right. Okay.
So,
all right.
Roles.
Fantastic. Okay. All right.
Since this is our first session, let's start with setting an agenda. So tell me what brings you here today.
Well, I have a difficult time because I'm so busy with a lot of things that I have to do. I have a lot of difficulty. I have a lot of difficulty setting schedules for myself and making sure that I'm able to accomplish everything that I have to do. So just overwhelmed with a lot that's on my plate.
Okay. So what would you like it to be? Or what do you want to set your goal as to be able to schedule the thing so you can accommodate everything going on in your life?
I want to learn ways to make my life more manageable.
Life more manageable for him. How would that look like for you?
Well, not feeling all over the place, being more organized.
Okay.
Not feeling overwhelmed.
Okay.
Having a clear idea of what I have to do each day.
Let me cut in here, because it sounds like you've got into working on this issue. Have you agreed on the agenda for today?
We're just setting the agenda.
Well, do you need to find out what having more control in her life looks like for her to agree on the topic?
I didn't understand. So,
with the agenda setting, we're just very concisely agreeing. What are we going to work on today?
Oh, it's just today's agenda?
Yes, yes.
Not the.
Now,
As therapists, one of the what you want to get to today is discuss goals for therapy.
Uh-huh.
But you're not doing that now. That's just that's what you want to get to. You want to find out what the client wants to get to,
uh-huh.
and just agree on how what topics you're going to cover today.
Okay, so you are, so what are we doing? Every day set agenda. Like,
yes.
What is today's goal?
Yes.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
We thought it differently. We thought the agenda for the entire therapy kind of like at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. All we're doing is agreeing on what are we going to focus on today.
Today. Okay. Then we have to move to the whole thing. Okay. So, good. So we're going to start it again then.
Sounds good.
Okay. We have, since we have limited time, let's start with what would you like to work on today? Is there something?
I think today I'd like to learn on different ways that I can be more organized.
Okay.
I'm not being difficult here, am I?
I know you're standing there. It doesn't help at all. So you want to find out ways you want to be organized.
Yeah.
So that's where you want to start today.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that correct? Yeah. Okay.
So all you need to do is write that down.
Yeah.
Okay. Great.
That's
so,
it.
Well, what do you want to get to today?
Who?
The therapist.
Then I have to clarify my how we're going to work on.
Well, you need to think about what do I want to get to today. Now, there might be some sessions where you don't have anything in mind. You're just going to work on whatever the client has in mind.
Mm-hmm.
But generally, you're going to have ideas about what's important to get to today, whether it's following up with where you left off last session, or the cool intervention you want to get to, or in this case, the instructions tell you that you want to talk about overall goals for therapy today.
Mm-hmm.
So the client wants to talk about being more organized. Great, mm-hmm. I write that down.
Got it. Okay,
you know,
I got it now.
Great, that sounds good to me. I'd also like to talk about our overall goals for therapy. How does that sound to you?
Yeah. Okay.
And then, which are we going to get to first?
Yeah.
In most of the time, I'm going to find out if the client has a preference. Do you have a preference about what to get to first?
Yeah.
Sometimes one sequence makes more sense than another. If we're going to work on organization and we're going to talk over goals and priorities,
mm-hmm.
probably makes sense to discuss goals and priorities first, because then when we work on organization, I'll know how they relate to our goals and priorities.
Mm-hmm.
If we work on organization first, I don't know what we're trying to accomplish in therapy, so that's...
Yes. Okay, got it. That really helps. Thank you.
How would she interfere then after what you said? Like, let's see now, what are your priorities?
We'll get to actually doing therapy later. Right now, we're just practicing agenda setting.
Okay. Yeah. And for that part, she didn't need to say that. She just needs to think about it.
Well, if we're going to agree on what we're covering in the session, I need to say it out loud, or the client won't know that we've agreed.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, whatever. Say, okay, you want to work on being more organized? Great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I also would like to talk over goals and priorities for therapy. How's that sound to you?
Yeah.
You know, seems to me it makes sense to talk over goals and priorities first, because then when we work on organization, I'll know how that relates to what we're trying to accomplish. How's that sound to you? And then we would start working on goals and priorities.
Okay. Got it. Thank you. That was very
We've already made the rounds.
Great. Any questions, comments, observations?
There's some observations. We were talking about, you know, how writing things down about the agenda setting and was a little bit awkward. Like, I jumped into a lot of, you know, talking without doing that, and it's a little different from what I'm used to.
Mm-hmm.
Just being more aware of that, and then how to address it with clients. You know, after the assessment, you know, doing the assessment, right? You know, and after that, it's like, what's that scene? And then you start with, know, how to kind of, yeah.
Good question, and I'll touch base on that in just a second, because other people are likely to have that question too. In terms of what agendas got written down?
We talked a lot about motivation
exercise.
Right. Kind of, right. Mm-hmm. We all kind of had that similar problem.
Did the therapist agenda items also get on the agenda?
Certainly, things organized.
No.
So one thing is, if there's anything I want to get to in today's session, I need to speak up for that too. In this case, the instructions told you that you want to talk about goals and priorities. If you don't mention that, you're probably not going to get to it in today's session. And then, wait a minute, we're now at session two and we don't know what we're trying to accomplish. That makes it a lot harder to be efficient and productive.
Okay. Good.
I did, that's one thing we didn't
study. We studied
that. Time to run the room in the main room. Time to rendezvous in the main room.
Thank you.
Look at
so you kind of take the outside, like, what is it?
Questions, comments, observations, having tried this out. While you're thinking about what questions, comments, and observations you have, I've got some observations that came up as I circulated around. One is, in most groups, the therapists were forgetting that they might have something in mind they want to and get to in this session, too. And part of agenda setting is, before the session starts, thinking, what do I have in mind for today? On the practical level, how I implement that is, I look at my notes from last session so I can remember where we left off. You know, if I happen to remember where we left off, great. Personally, I find it's a real good idea to look and see. You know, and, you know, what was the homework assignment last time? You know, where are we in therapy? What do I want to try to get to today? And so, in addition to finding out what the client has in mind for today, I want to advocate for what I would like to get to today. The instructions told you that today you want to talk over goals, overall goals for therapy. And so, if the client wants to be more organized or less stressed and more in traffic or whatever, great. And a real good way to facilitate agenda setting is to summarize or paraphrase. Great, you want to work on being more organized. I write that down. Sounds good. I'd also like to talk over our overall goals for therapy so we know what we're trying to accomplish. And then, oh, we've got two different items on the agenda. What are we going to get to first? You know, most of the time I'm going to want to find out if the client has a preference, and does it matter to you which of these we get to first? I'll generally go along with the client's preference. But sometimes it makes a difference. In this case, if we're going to talk over goals for therapy and we're going to work on some specific issue, it probably makes sense to talk over goals for therapy first so I know what our goals are when we're working on whatever the issue is. So I would say to the client, probably makes sense to talk over goals and priorities first and then get to being more organized so I know how that fits in with our overall goals. How's that sound to you? How's all that sound? It's not terribly complicated and fancy, but it takes practice if you're not used to it. A lot of therapists find, you know, they say, you know, what do you want to work on today? And the client says, oh, it's terrible. I had this awful fight with my boyfriend. And they're off and running without ever finding out whether there's anything else we want to be sure to get to today without the therapist speaking up for what they want to get to today. And maybe that's the most important thing to accomplish today, or maybe it isn't. Just because the person's upset about it doesn't necessarily mean that's top priority. Particularly for those clients who are always upset about something, it tends to get into the crisis of the day mode, which makes it really hard to accomplish anything on an ongoing basis. Right. And if we've
talked over goals and priorities, and think about, okay, yes, they're upset about X. What are we trying to accomplish? Does it make sense to spend the whole session on that? Or do I want to try to negotiate part of the time on that? Or do I want to try to negotiate to spend the session on something else? This gives the option of steering things so that we end up using the time more productively. One of the things that's risky is with agenda setting, if I use a very open-ended prompt, like, what brings you in here today? That tends to get the person talking in general about their life. It makes my job harder. You know, if I use something like, what do you want to focus on today? What do you want to talk about today? What do you want to accomplish today? You know, that's more likely to get a nice, concise, well, I want to be more organized. I want to be less stressed, whatever. And I can, oh, less stressed, great. I write that down. And, you know, I'd also like to follow up with the assignment we had at the end of last time. How's that sound to you? Questions? One comment one group had, and I bet it applies to other groups too, is this writing stuff down bit, you know, feels awkward. I'm not used to it. How do I handle it with clients? Well, with most clients, it works just fine to just go ahead and do it. A, clients who haven't been in therapy before will just figure everybody does that, you know, and it won't be an issue. You know, clients who've been in therapy before, you know, probably know their previous therapist didn't do that, you know, but they may well just figure different therapists do things differently and it's not an issue. For most clients, it's not an issue. You know, think about it the other way around. Imagine you were in therapy. One option is your therapist listens to you, nods, says appropriate things, seems to be awake. The other option is the therapist listens to you, nods, says appropriate things, seems to be awake, and writes down the important stuff. Which feels better? For most people, if the therapist is writing things down selectively, they feel more listened to, more taken seriously, more heard. For most people, it's they you know, either don't even think about it, or it's a positive. Now, obviously, your paranoid clients may have some issues. You know, but if I explain, you know, I'm writing stuff down so that I can remember it. I'm writing stuff that seems important to get back to, so I remember it and get it right. And I'm just writing down what you told me. I'm not writing down, boy, is this guy a nutcase? Or I don't say that. I'm writing down what you tell me so that I remember it and get it right. This helps me, you know, makes it easier for me to be helpful to you. Even very paranoid clients generally are cool with it. You know, in my 35 years, I've had two or three people who are not willing to have me write anything down during the session. Those individuals also haven't been willing for me to maintain any progress notes. The licensing board would have a real hard time with it if I played along with that. Mm-hmm. And I said, sorry, you know, if you're not comfortable with me writing stuff down, I can do therapy without writing stuff down. That's going to slow things down a bit. But I'm not willing to do therapy without maintaining notes. You know, and then the client has a choice. They can along with me maintaining notes, in which case I'm happy to work with them, or they can shop around and see if they can find somebody who's foolish enough to do therapy without taking notes. You know, those clients are also among the most likely to sue, and if you get sued and don't have any notes, you're really up the creek. Questions, comments, reactions?
Now, my first experience as a client, and I sat down and I started saying some things, and this guy started writing things down. My thought was, oh, what did I say? Why would that be so important? And then that happened throughout the session. Mm-hmm. I did eventually talk to him about it.
Yeah.
But it's striking as a client.
Yeah, it is. And one fringe benefit it has is if we succeed in writing down the important stuff, mm-hmm. then it focuses the client's attention on the important right. stuff. And think about it, as you're going through life with all the complexity and busyness, we often get focused on trivia and don't focus on the important stuff. And, you know, if I can get more focused on the important stuff, that's actually likely to be useful in helping me, you know, live my life more effectively. It's now time to break for lunch. For those of you who aren't accustomed to this area, there are a bunch of lunch options around here. Just immediately to the east of this building in the mall parking lot, there's a Chipotle at a Famous Dave's. There's what I think a Ruby Tuesday across the street. Farther east in the mall parking lot, we've got a Panera, we've got Brown Bag Burgers. East along Lorraine, we've got Boston Market and all sorts of fast food. In the mall, there's a standard mall food court, which is no more wonderful or terrible than any mall food court. So we got lots of good options. Barb will be here at 2. If you go to Famous Dave's, let them know that you need to be up promptly or they'll take too long. And I'll see you next month.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's called Tennessee.